Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on the sportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar, known for delivering solar excellence since 1984 and recently voted best solar company in Marin County. We're also brought to you by Terzo, an authentic upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cow Hollow in San Francisco. Today we have two guests in conversations that we had Sunday at AT&T Park in San Francisco, Giants right-hander Derek Law and Paul Gackle from the San Jose Mercury News. We'll start with Derek Law. Derek, I'm watching you on Saturday here at AT&T Park. I noticed you were keeping the ball down. Looked like, you're trying to change speeds a little bit differently with your breaking balls. I heard that you were working on that. So tell us about some of the progress you made in Sacramento to get back here.
That was one of the main goals is, differentiating between my curveball and slider. Because when I went down to Sacramento in June, they were kind of the same pitch. And, it was kind of hurting me because guys could sit on basically one pitch. Fastball and curveball, and I was like, I needed something else. And before I left, Buster kind of mentioned it to me, and if Buster kind of mentions it to you, you should probably do it. So I got down there. My mechanics need a little tweak, and I was rushing a little bit, and kind of need to gather myself, top my wind up, and kind of just finish. I wasn't really finishing either. Watched a bunch of film, and kind of. They put me in successful situations. It was kind of nice. I was closing. I was throwing in games when we were leading, eighth and ninth inning. So that kind of helped me get in a groove, which was nice. So it's kind of nice to see that carry over to here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would think it'd be pretty hard to work on mechanics during games, but if it's a less pressure type of situation, then you can kind of have the muscle memory to remember what you're trying to work on, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. And especially, even if I would have a bad one or something like that, I would, the next day I would have off. So I'd be able to go to the bullpen, work with the pitching coach, and not throw too much, but just enough to kind of tweak some stuff, and he'd kind of give a tip or two, and then I'd try and put it into my arsenal and whatnot, and I ended up working out pretty well.
How challenging was it for you emotionally? Because you had a lot of confidence here, and then all of a sudden you're going back down to the minor leagues to work on things. Did it take a little while to kind of get the mindset that hey, this is what's going on, and I got to do this?
Yeah, it was a little tough. I had a really good year last year, and I kind of wanted to do that again. I told myself before the year, I was like, I'm not going to have a sophomore slump or whatever they call it. And what had happened. And, nobody said the game's going to be easy. So, I didn't really look back. Once I got sent down, I was like, I'm here to work on stuff and make sure I get back up there as quick as possible.
Did you realize, it's one of those things at the major league level, like you said, these hitters, you just can't get away with anything, right?
Right. They're adjusting to you as much as you're adjusting to them. And, especially trying to tweak something up here, it's hard, especially if you can't figure it out right away. That's why guys are major leaguers, and that's why they stay, because they're able to adjust pitch to pitch. And that's what I need to be able to do from now on.
When things aren't going your way, you're probably hearing it from a lot of sides. Like you said, you got to listen to Buster. But are there times where you have to block out a little bit and kind of just go on your own because you are maybe hearing from a lot of different pitching coaches, a lot of different ideas? Is that hard to gather all that information in?
Yeah, especially when you're in a little slump, you hear it from everywhere. You kind of take that in. You take little details from what everybody says. But for the most part, you're here for a reason. You know yourself the best. That's what I think. And, you've watched film on yourself multiple times, so that's kind of what makes it a little easier for you to be able to watch that because you've done it so much. So I think, you take bits and pieces from everybody else, but at the same time, at the end of the day, it's kind of, that's up to you.
You always know the velocity has been there, and I noticed, as I was saying at the very beginning, you kept the ball down yesterday. How much was that really a concentration for you to try to keep the ball maybe between the knees, thighs area?
That's always – I always try and concentrate on that. Obviously, I didn't do too well that the beginning of the year. Now I was thinking of other stuff, and it just obviously it wasn't working out. But I think that's everybody's goal as a pitcher is just to keep the ball down. Whether or not it was the tweaking my mechanics or whatnot to help do that, you know, sometimes the ball's going to be left up. You know, I left one up to Molina the first day. Kind of regretted that. And the next day out, I was like, this isn't going to happen again. So it was nice to see that I made that adjustment.
What about as far as just the whole team? You know, probably an aggravating year, I guess, for the whole team. But are there some positives that you guys can bring into next year?
Definitely very aggravating. You know, nobody wants to lose as many games as we lost so far. I could tell that the vibe just definitely changed since I left. And when I left, everybody was really down. You know, everybody was kind of pressing. You know, nobody wanted to keep losing. Obviously, nobody wants to lose. And now it's kind of everybody's just kind of having fun. You know, trying to get the job done. And if we can do a good job and, you know, putting some wins together and taking that into next year, you know, it'll carry over for sure.
When you experienced something like last year, too, where you guys were in the postseason, I mean, it was exciting. You were like a cheerleader of sorts in that dugout. I mean, it's such a different type of feel when you get to September and you're in a race like that, isn't it?
Yeah. I think this might be a little bit more heartbreaking than the loss in the playoffs. I don't know. you know, last year, I think I was talking to one of my friends, and they're like, oh, it's going to be awesome to see you again next year or something like that. I was like, you know, it's never guaranteed to make the playoffs. I mean, a lot of guys have played for how many years and haven't even got to a World Series. Fortunately, we're with an organization that expectations are through the roof. So when a season like this happens, you know, it's kind of shocking to everybody. But as players, we understand, you know, what it takes to get there. And especially me last year, the first year, you know, kind of witnessing that in general, you know, we kind of made a comeback in September. For the most part, you know, it was a tough year. I can't really do anything about it. All you can do is, like I said, continue, play some good baseball and carry that over to next year.
Before I let you go, you know, you got these young pitchers like yourself. At some point, do you feel like you guys have to take the bull by the horns? Because I know, you know, last year we talked a lot about how, you know, Javi Lopez was still here, Sergio Romo, and, you know, the year before that, Affeldt. That's over with now. It's more about, like, you got these younger guys coming up. Do you feel like, you know, hey, it's now time to take the bull by the horn, sort of?
Yeah, I think we thought that in spring training as well. You know, whether or not we came out and did that, which, you know, I obviously did not. You know, you got young guys like Crick coming up, and he's kind of making a statement too, which is nice. I think everybody kind of wants to grab the bull by the horns, you know, not just the young guys, but all the older guys too. And especially, like I said, after this year, you know, we got something to prove next year for sure.
All right. Hey, Derek, thanks a lot. Good luck the rest of this season and into next year.
No problem. Appreciate it.
That's Giants reliever Derek Law. Coming up, we'll hear from Paul Gackel from the San Jose Mercury News in just a moment. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. On Sunday at AT&T Park in San Francisco, I had a chance to talk with Paul Gackel from the San Jose Mercury News. Here was that conversation. Paul, first off, how much are you enjoying, you know, filling in here for Andy Baggerly? You're at the Mercury News now, and I know you're going to be covering the Sharks at length, but, you know, covering a little bit of San Francisco Giants.
Well, it's always fun to drive in just to the ballpark. You know, you come in on 280, and it kind of looks like you're coming into Oz, and then it's such a beautiful place to be. So even though the team isn't in contention really this year, I mean, obviously it would be really fun if they were, you know, in the hunt for a playoff spot right now. But I feel like any time you can come out to this ballpark, and, you know, the press box here is just A+. So it's always pretty fun to be around here.
I know you were here for the Brandon Crawford bad call, which should have been a home run. And, you know, it kind of brings up a topic that I've talked to a lot of different guests about this year, and that's replay, which I just don't think is working. And in that case, you know, it really didn't work because, you know, on the field they're saying that it's a home run, yet they reverse it and say that, you know, it wasn't a home run, that the fan interfered with that ball when it was going to hit that green tin out there. What did you think about that whole situation?
Well, I'm with you on replay, and this is really a big issue in hockey too, because hockey's it's going to enter its third season of instant replay. And my whole thing about instant replay is, okay, we're in an era where we have a gazillion TV angles, and nobody wants to see a game decided by a bad call, and you know, nobody wants the umps or the refs to have to live with that. But I think the idea of instant replay is really to get rid of the egregious mistake, right? I mean, it's not. I mean, so in hockey, you have we're looking at, you know, offsides by millimeters, and it's just missing the whole point. So for me, this really signals what I've always wanted, which is a fifth umpire who's sort of like an eye in the sky. So if there is an egregious mistake, he can call down, and then you get the call right that way when there's a huge mistake, rather than having all these challenges. Because I feel like in hockey, coaches just throw the challenge flag as a lifeline sometimes, right? Well, I have one. Might as well, maybe it can get reversed. And that's not really sort of the spirit of the whole rule. And so if you had that situation, you know, on Thursday night when Crawford hit the home run, it would have stood because you would have had somebody in the stadium who knew the ground rules, and they never would have called down in the first, you know, Matheny challenged it. But if you have an eye in the sky that calls down, you wouldn't have had them call down, and you could have, you know, avoided that whole type of situation. Now, of course, New York is saying it had nothing to do with the ground rule. They knew the ground rule, but that it was that he had reached, they thought he had reached into, you know, the field of play to interfere with it. Well, that's, I'm not buying their argument there. I think you have guys in New York, it's, what, 1:30 in the morning or something like that there. They probably don't know the ground rule, and there's maybe a little bit of revisionist history going on there. They're saying, no, we thought it was fan interference we thought he'd reached into the field of play. I think they didn't obviously know the ground rule. And so you have this whole fiasco for nothing.
I agree with Brandon Crawford that for him to reach that ball, another fan would have had to hold him by his feet and hang him over there because there's no way that fan could reach all the way across that area.
Well, and that speaks to what I'm saying, right, about having somebody in the stadium who knows the actual stadium, because anybody who is familiar with this ballpark would know that. It's impossible for a fan to reach into the field of play, but because it's being done by somebody in New York in the wee hours in the morning, you know, they're not as familiar with the ballpark. I just think that this is an easy mistake to fix.
How do you look at September baseball for a team that's out of it? You bring up some of these young players because of the September call-ups. So you have a lot of teams that have that. So is this the best spot to gauge some of these players, the young guys? I mean, is it going to be tough for the Giants to make evaluations based on what's going on here the last month?
Well, I just think that if somebody comes up and they have a nice September, that's a good, you know, start to next year. But I wouldn't, you know, give a guy a job based on what he does on a September call-up. I think that, you know, has to continue into spring training, you know, and that's where you really make your evaluation. But let's say a guy comes up here and he hits, you know, 400 or 385, then you highlight his name and go, okay, or maybe you give him a little bit more of a leash in spring training if things don't, you know, start, you know, if he doesn't come out of the gates really well in spring training. But I think at the end of the day, you have to make your evaluations next year in spring training. You can't really win a job in September.
Well, I think the real advantage for the player is that, you know, I'll give you an example of a Ryder Jones. Let's say he comes up earlier in the season, and after a couple of weeks, if he's not producing and you're in the race, he's not going to be in the lineup. Whereas this situation, you know, it's almost irrelevant if he hits for a high average. He's getting great experience for a young guy who's trying to, you know, make this team next year. I would think that would be a big advantage.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's experience. It's experience for the player. It's a good opportunity for them to show their stuff. It's a good opportunity to go into the offseason with a good feeling if you come up here and perform. But again, if you're the team and management, I don't think that you're, you know, unless it's a guy that is already really on your radar and you're already projecting as potentially a guy that you're going to put in the lineup next year, I don't think you're making, you know, a concrete decision on what happens, you know, at this time of the year.
We'll have more with Paul Gackle from the San Jose Mercury News right after this. Are you looking for a great place for dinner? Then you really need to try Terzo, an authentic, upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cow Hollow in San Francisco. When you sit down at your table at Terzo, you will feel the warm and welcoming ambiance. They make you feel like you're at home with great service and a delicious meal. Serving dinner only, Terzo offers unique food drawn from the Mediterranean region. They change their menu daily based on the local availability of product. Open 7 days a week, Terzo suggests reservations, but they do have a bar area available for walk-ins. Check out their website, www.terzosf.com, for daily menus and hours. Drop by Terzo at 3011 Steiner at Union Street in San Francisco for an exceptional neighborhood dining experience and your private dining needs. When you see Jeff Samardzija go out there, and he's among the league leaders, I think right now he's at the top of the National League as far as innings pitched. How valuable do you think that is? I mean, even though he didn't have the best season, it seems like he's come on a little bit stronger in the second half of the year, and just a guy who's going to give you that many innings.
Well, I do think it's very valuable, especially, you know, where we're at in the game of baseball right now. The bullpen, you know, is so important. Look at what the Cleveland Indians were able to do last year with Andrew Miller. And so when you have a guy that you can count on to give you seven, eight per start, that's huge, because that means that your bullpen's fresh, and if you get, you know, dinged up somewhere on the back end of the rotation, your bullpen's not all worn out. So I do think that those guys, even though we're in an era where, you know, the starting pitcher gets the hook pretty quickly and we are in, you know, we micromanage our bullpens, if you do have one of those, a couple of those guys in your rotation, obviously Madison Bumgarner here in San Francisco as well, that just keeps your bullpen fresh, and you know, you can keep your, you can have your top guys in the bullpen ready to go when you really need them, when you get into trouble. So I think that's a big thing.
You know, when a team has a losing season, I think a lot of the fans start calling for big changes. You know, some don't. I mean, you don't want to see some of those core players traded away. But do you think it's a good move to break things up, shake things up a little bit? Not just from a baseball perspective, but you cover the Sharks, and, you know, you've seen it. Patrick Marleau now has left. I mean, the Sharks didn't offer him a longer-term deal. He got that with the Maple Leafs. He's gone, and, you know, he was such a fan favorite.
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily a great move in the case of the Sharks, because I think hockey is a very different sport, because you're dealing with a salary cap. So you always have to look at, like, what is the player's value, you know, in regards to the salary cap, right? So somebody like Patrick Marleau, I think the offer that he wanted was 2 years, $10 million, and the Sharks came to the table late, you know, sort of after the Maple Leafs made their offer. So I look at a guy like Marleau, all the boxes that he checks off at that number, and I go, man, you know, kind of still be nice to have him, because there aren't a lot of other players out there that are going to check off all those boxes for that price. Baseball is a little bit different, right? It depends on what you want to spend and whether you're willing to go over the luxury tax. So I think, you know, a team like the San Francisco Giants and, you know, all the 530 consecutive sellouts, you know, I think maybe you want to spend a few bucks sometimes to, you know, go out and get a left. I think they're going to have to go out and get an outfielder. You know, you're going to have to go out and do some things. So I do think it's a little different in baseball, but I do wonder about this team. You know, there is a stale element to what's going on here. You have Madison Bumgarner and Johnny Cueto at the top of your rotation. You're in a pretty good spot, but you do wonder. You look at that lineup, you know, and you see all those names, you know, Pence, Sandoval, Span, and you go, yeah, you know, maybe it's time to get some fresh blood in here.
Absolutely. You know, I guess the fans in the Bay Area, I want to finish up with this. I guess they're getting kind of spoiled because, you know, they had the three World Series with the Giants. The Warriors are, you know, winning two out of the last three. The Sharks getting to the final. I mean, that definitely boosted some confidence. So what's it been like for you covering it and just kind of seeing the way the fans react to sports here in the Bay Area?
Well, they want a winner. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that about the Marleau comparison, because I feel like I constantly have to tell Sharks fans and hockey fans in the Bay Area, this isn't baseball. Like, in baseball, you know, you think back to a couple years ago, or last year, the Giants have a very obvious need in the bullpen. A couple of years ago, they needed some starting pitching. And if you're willing to spend the money, you can usually go out and get those pieces. Hockey with the salary cap, it's just so, like, you can't just go, well, Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau are getting old, let's cut ties with those guys and go out and get some other big-name players. Those big-name players don't hit the market in hockey. So I do think it's very tough. And you see the Sharks, you know, they've made the playoffs, what is it, 12 of the last 13 years? That's a heck of a run. Like, I talk to people up in Canada, you know, and they look at the Sharks as, like, one of the crown jewels of the NHL, because year in, year out, they're in contention for a Stanley Cup. Around here, they're kind of like the laughing stock of the teams in the Bay Area, because they haven't really been able, you know, to go all the way and win the Stanley Cup. So I do think, you know, there's a culture in here that, you know, the Niners, look at the history they've had with their success, the Giants, three World Series in 5 years, the Warriors, what they're doing now. If you can't, you know, hang in, you know, in the championship conversation, you kind of get beat up a little bit. You know, having said that, look at the fans out here on a night-to-night, day-to-day basis coming to, you know, the ballpark was practically full yesterday, and this team's 32 games or whatever it was below 500. That's incredible. So, you know, the culture that they've been able to establish here with the Giants is pretty special. And, I just think this ballpark, you know, I mentioned it, you know, at the top coming in, it's such an amazing experience that there's almost like a Wrigley Field to being able to come out to the ballpark here. So, I think that's pretty fun. But the Giants are going to have to get something done. You know, I don't think the fans are going to sit around and you know, allow this team to be 30 games under 500 3 or 4 years in a row.
You're right about that. Well, look for Paul's stories, the San Jose Mercury News, filling in for Andy Baggerly, but especially San Jose Sharks. That should be a lot of fun this year. I love watching the Sharks. Thanks a lot for joining us, Paul.
Thanks for having me on, Virus.
That's Paul Gackel from the San Jose Mercury News. I want to thank him and Derek Law for joining us from AT&T Park. Coming up on Friday, we'll hear from Giants infielder Ryder Jones. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.